Good morning, and welcome to Unifin's fourth quarter 2018 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, we will open up the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. David Pernis, Director of Investor Relations and Corporate Finance at Unifin. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm very pleased to welcome you to Unifin Financiera's earnings call. This morning, Unifin senior management will discuss the company's fourth quarter and full year 2018 consolidated results per the press release distributed yesterday. If you have not received a copy of the earnings release, please contact the investor relations team to obtain a copy immediately. Prior to introducing our management, I would like to remind you that forward-looking statements may be made during this call. These do not account for economic circumstances, industry conditions, the company's performance, or financial results. As such, these forward-looking statements are based on several assumptions and factors that could change, causing actual results to materially differ from current expectations. Therefore, we ask you to refer to the disclaimer located in the earnings release prior to making an investment decision. We are very pleased to present today Mr. Sergio Camacho, Chief Executive Officer, and Sergio Cantino, Chief Financial Officer. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Sergio Camacho for his presentation. Please go ahead, Sergio.
Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. During 2018, Unifin reported growth in its annual results that demonstrate the resilience and strength of its business model. Net income increased by 8.6% during the year. The level of capitalization reached 19.2% after the perpetual bond issuance. The leasing yield improved to 38%, while the net interest margin was at healthy and stable 8%, and we continue with reported NPL levels below 1%. The results are especially noteworthy given the uncertainty in the macroeconomic environment of the year, especially by the last quarter with concerns over a global economic slowdown caused a surge in market volatility. As a result, global financial markets were under pressure. Stocks tumbled, some emerging market currencies weakened, and investors preferred investment-grade bonds over high yield, seeking safe haven investments. On top of that, Mexico had to face its own uncertainty. Following the July presidential election, the long-drawn out of negotiation of NAFTA, and the cancellation of the Mexico City airport project. Furthermore, the Central Bank of Mexico played a decisive role in counteracting inflationary pressures and strengthening the macroeconomic fundamentals by adopting a restrictive monetary policy, with two interest rate hikes in the fourth quarter for a total increase of 100 basis points in 2018, leading to a tightening of the local credit market conditions. In addition, a more conciliatory approach from the new government by approving a fiscally responsible 2019 federal budget provided certainty to market participants. Unifin is well known for its conservative risk management strategy and act accordingly. Early in 2018, we anticipated our financial needs via the successive issuance of two bonds in international markets, insulating us from any potential credit crunch. Although, as a consequence, our funding cost rose by 34 basis points. This gave us the liquidity to support and execute our commercial strategy for 2018 and shield the company from potential adversities. Our financial decisions are based on a long-term perspective and motivated by prudence, hence the proactive approach to the market. We also were very selective in the underwriting of credit, focusing on the highest quality of clients. This, in addition to the overall environment, led to a slowdown in growth of our credit portfolio, but allow us to keep non-performing loans below 1%. Meanwhile, aligned with change in management, the company implemented a new strategy that impacted the entire corporate structure, Power for Your Business, based on two pillars, data management and advisory to our clients. This change allow us to offer our clients informed financial guidance and provide the value-added advice they require to boost their long-term growth of their businesses and increase the cross-sale between our different products. From an operational standpoint, this new approach will drive additional synergies and efficiencies across all areas of the organization. The aforementioned is supported by new technological platforms that will enable us to have continuous monitoring of the productivity of our commercial, operational, and financial strategy, improving the profitability of the company. Although 2018 will be a challenging year, we are convinced that the business fundamentals are solid, and we are committed to generate value for the stakeholders. Unifin is confident in Mexico's positive long-term outlook and will continue investing in the country, thereby helping small and medium enterprises to grow. Regarding our business trends for the quarter, as previously mentioned, the fourth quarter turned out to be a challenging one for the Mexican economy due to a combination of factors such as the volatile global markets and some domestic concerns such as the cancellation of the new airport in Mexico City, causing the central bank to act accordingly by increasing interest rates. Notwithstanding these headwinds, total revenues increased 21.2% in the quarter against the same period a year ago. As we mentioned last quarter, we are disclosing two new metrics that will allow the market to track our progress in meeting the goals of improving our profitability: leasing yield and net interest margin. The leasing yield is calculated by dividing the last 12 months of the lease income by the average lease portfolio, while the NIM is the division of the last 12 months of nominal financial margin and the average total portfolio. We have seen new trends in the origination of loans as the client appetite for extended maturity has increased. Over the past quarters, the yield has experienced a contraction mainly explained by this extension on the average maturity of our leasing portfolio, from 35 months back in 2015 to 41 by the end of last year. By extending the maturity of the new lease contract, the nominal rent amount to be received is divided by the larger number of payments, hence the reported contraction. The extension in the tenor of new originations and eventually on the average portfolio maturity is a consequence of market and client demand, as we do not modify the condition on existing contracts. Given the continuous efforts to increase the implicit rates in the leasing portfolio, the yields have continued to improve in the second half of 2018. They were a reported 31.1% in the second quarter of the year, 37.4% in the third quarter of the year, and 38% in the fourth quarter. And we expect this metric to continue improving going forward. The net interest margin in the fourth quarter came at an 8%, down from a year ago, but nearly stable against the third quarter of the year of 8.1%, which was offset by our prudent drawing upon credit facilities. Let's move to the financial margin results, which nominally reached 1 billion pesos. A 14.7% increase year over year, financial margin as a percentage of total revenues declined to 20.3% compared to the 21.4% reported in the fourth quarter of 2017. However, the deterioration in the margin vis-a-vis a year ago was due to higher interest expense, which rose 29.7% during the fourth quarter again, explained by our conservative drawing of credit. I would like to highlight that only 294 million pesos of this higher expense were caused by an increase in the cost of funding, whereas 1.4 billion pesos of the increase were related to incremental debt, which was related to the decision to perform our financing needs early in 2018, causing negative carry on drawn debt. The company continued to focus aggressively on keeping costs down, and OPEX as a percentage of revenues fell to 6.1% from 7.7% a year ago. This was achieved despite the investment in our IT platform to better manage our commercial, operative, and financial structure. Our operating income for the quarter reached 663 million pesos, compared to 710 million pesos in the same period of last year. During the fourth quarter of 2017, the company reported 148 million pesos before taxes of additional operating income related to our insurance facility rebate due to lower claims, since the apparent contraction versus last year. However, at the start of 2018, such income was registered monthly under other lease benefits, which for the full year represented 170 million pesos, explaining the higher comparative base of 2017. Consolidated net income for the quarter reached 502 million pesos during the quarter, a 2.2% increase versus last year. As mentioned before, during the fourth quarter of 2017, the company reported additional income of 102 million net of income tax that positively impacted our results. Full year 2018 consolidated net income increased 8.6% year over year. The company was able to keep non-performing loans down to below 1% of the portfolio, and our allowance for loan losses represented 110% at year-end. The adjusted NPL ratio, which is the full amount of future relief receivable, stood at 3.1%. It is really important to highlight that Unifin maintains ownership of the assets under lease contracts, being significant in a potential claim at successful recovery of the assets. Additionally, the book value of the assets represents approximately 60% of their market value, which is not considered in the allowance for loan losses, therefore making our provision methodology even more conservative. As of year-end, total assets increased 21.1%, mainly due to the growth of the total portfolio and net fixed assets during the quarter. The current cost of funding is 10.1% versus 9.8% at the close of 2017. Notwithstanding that the reference rates increased by 100 basis points in 2018, providing the importance of the conservative measures the company took to shield the balance sheet. Unifin average debt maturity profile stood at 47 months vis-a-vis 39 months of the total portfolio, and all of our U.S. dollar denominated debt is fully hedged to maturity. The stockholders' equity stood at $13 billion at the end of 2018, a 71.3% increase versus 2017, explained by the capital infusion related to the perpetual notes, which are classified and treated as equity. In addition to retained earnings, Unifin capitalization ratio was 19.2%, up from 13.9% reported in the fourth quarter of 2017, excluding mark-to-market of $670 million, capitalization stood at 18.4%. As we previously mentioned, we are focused on improving efficient capital allocation, and we continue to increase the share repurchase activity, buying 7 million shares during the quarter. We believe that this approach is an effective way to return value to our investors. Now, let me talk a little bit about financing. As previously mentioned, the company has disclosed its needs for financing to fulfill the budget for 2019. Such needs were announced in the amount of up to $1 billion. It is important to highlight that over 35% of that budget considers rollover of existing local securitizations. The intent is to increase the tenor of such debt and benefit from an extended revolving period. Additionally, the remaining 65% will be used as working capital to meet our origination budget for 2018. We will close monitor credit markets, and by no means Unifil will jeopardize the cost of funding curve for higher than anticipated growth. As it has done over the past 25 years, the company will always follow a prudent and conservative financial strategy, and thus we will review our different options in light of market conditions to maintain a sound and healthy balance sheet at all times. And with that, I will bring my remarks to a close and will now take questions. Operator, we are ready for the Q&A.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. In the interest of time, we ask that you please limit yourself to one question and rejoin the queue for any additional questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Carlos Rivera with Barclays. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, everyone, and thanks for the presentation. I'm just wondering if you could give us a little bit of an update in terms of demand, what you have seen so far this year. I mean, the last quarter of last year, the results were solid given the macroeconomic conditions and the high uncertainty. But just wondering if you are seeing already a pickup in demand, or what is the outlook for this full year? And also, if we could link that to the outlook for the business more medium term. We saw an announcement by the Ministry of Finance and the Association trying to increase financial inclusion, in which banks are committed to increase the penetration of SMEs financing options. So do you see that as a competition for the midterm? What is your take on that now? Thank you very much.
Yeah, getting back on the outlook on how do we see now the current trends on economic activity, I would like to highlight that the fiscal budget that we saw from the government was a good one, was on a very conservative way, and well received by investors. We just recently saw the UMS issuance that also proved that the investors continue to have confidence in Mexico. getting to the local markets and to the economic activity, we haven't seen really a pickup yet, as we just have like 20 days early on the year. But that's why we are on our side doing everything on the business intelligence efforts and on these power to the businesses strategies that we had in order to boost the origination. We are very close to the market, we're very close to our clients, and yes, we are expecting to see some pickup, significant pickup by the end of the quarter, as long as all these projects, such as the Tren Maya or the other things that this new government has on the pipeline, start to materialize. Getting also to what the government has said on putting a lot of support to the SME sector in Mexico, we are very close also to these developing banks such as Anafins and Bancomex, because what they have already said is that they want to use Mexican entities such as Unifin to really develop and let's say disburse all these support and this money that they want to put in on the system for boosting the SME sector. So we're ready also in that front, and that's also part of our strategy.
Okay, a quick follow-up on that. Is there any program where you could get cheaper funding from the development banks? Do you have right now any funding that's coming from there? And are you in any talks to develop that if you're not, or increase the lines that come from them? Thanks.
Yes, we have both with Nafins and Bancomex credit facilities. And yes, we have already touched base and have meetings with the new administration, and they are preparing some programs that we could take advantage of.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Alonso Garcia with Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. My question is if you could provide some outlook for the margin this year and how dependent that is on growth in new regions where competition is lower and probably you can charge a higher rate. Thank you.
Sure. Yes, as you may recall on the second quarter call, I announced this plan of starting to improve our profitability. So far, we have already gained roughly 70-80 bps on the margin, and we have an expectation to basically double that for this year. Of course, it will be a matter on how the new funding and the spread for the new funding are going to be. But once again, that's one of the main priorities for the company to have an improvement on profitability.
Thank you. And regarding, the growth in new regions, I mean, how much do you expect new regions to contribute to the business in 2019 compared to 2018, or how they are going to contribute in terms of the margin outlook?
Yes, of course. I mean, there are several hubs in the country that require different type of attention. No, of course, in the Mexico City and metropolitan area, and probably in places like Monterrey and Guadalajara, these are more sophisticated markets, and there is significantly more presence there, no? So competition, to a point, could put some a little pressure in terms of repricing the originations. However, the focus of Unifin will continue to be diversifying our originations, opening new areas, looking out for regions like the Bajío, like the regions of tourist sectors which are outperforming, and that's more of where the focus of Unifin will be this year. But in reality, we don't anticipate that we're going to have any pressure or any complications on passing the cost of funding to our clients. The rationale behind that is given the low penetration, the very low penetration to the market entirely, no? And given that, we have seen and we have anticipated with these business intelligence efforts that we have done with many data analytics in industries and surveys, no, to clients. And the cost of funding or the implicit rates that we charge are not even the first in line consideration for them to decide on a financing condition, no? Hence, the efforts on repricing. If you remember, early last year, we announced that the minimum rate that we were going to be charging was 22%, and we continue increasing that policy, and we continue successfully repricing our portfolio. No.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jason Molin with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, thank you. Hi. Can you talk about, first, the competitive environment? Just what's going on in terms, you just talked about interest rates and what kind of rates you're offering. And I'm just thinking about the demand for leasing products from your clients and how you think of pricing would be my first question. Yeah, so competition, demand, pricing. And then secondly, if you can talk about how you think about going forward, the government talk about implementing more financing or providing more financing for SMEs on the leasing side. If you can talk about how you think that will impact your business. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Jason. Competition continues to remain stable. What we are starting to see is that as long as the credit has been less available for small leasing companies, we believe or we are working to take advantage of that and actually trying to gain share, particularly in some cities in the country where the presence of these small leasing was important. We are taking advantage of that. Regarding the government, once again, I mean, they have already announced their implicit support to the SME. And it's basically with their decal of their target for the sexenio to boost the SME sector. And on that, they are, as I said, approaching to Mexican financial entities to really help them in delivering that support to the final entrepreneur. And on that, as I said, we have already been close to the Bancomex and Nafinsa to see how we can work together in order to take those supports to their SMEs. There's nothing yet on paper because those were like initial talks, but we are really acknowledged that they want to work with entities or financial entities like Unifin.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Guillermo Diego with Santander. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, sir. How are you? My question is regarding in the provisions line. I don't know if you could give us more color about that line, please.
On the provision for NPL, the 110% that we have announced? Yes,
exactly.
Yes, if you recall, 2 quarters ago, we improved our methodology on estimated losses on the portfolio, and we had a hike in, I believe it was in the second quarter, an increase from 100 to 108 on that day. The reason why now it's 110 has to do with the model and the calculation that we apply for the estimated losses. And that's it. It's just the way that we weighted some clients that are on a past due, but nothing has changed on the policy. No, this policy, as we said on the past, has to do with how does the banking commission wants to estimate the NPLs, and we agree on that, and because it's a more safe way to calculate and estimated losses. And that's why we have this over reserve on the NPL.
And sorry, Diego, just to complement a little bit on that, as said through the call, I think it's also very important to highlight that in that estimation, we have not put implicitly, or we have not considered the potential recovery value of the asset, which is very relevant because we keep property of the asset. No? So it makes it even better for us to have a claim on the asset, and then when we realize the asset in the secondary market, Unifin gets a benefit from the book value vis-a-vis the secondary market value of the asset per se.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Joe Kogan with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I wanted to ask a question about the slight uptrend in NPLs. I know it was 0.6 in 2016, then up to 0.7, and now 1%. And I was wondering if there's any commonality in that, any trends we should infer from that, or if it's really just a couple of loans and it, you expect to just go up and down around those levels. And also in line with that, I noticed while the NPL ratio is going up, the adjusted NPL ratio has actually fallen a little. So I was wondering why that is.
On the adjusted NPL, the way it's calculated, and it's basically adjusted for methodology to be comparable with the banking methodology for NPLs and so on, it takes basically the full outstanding amount of the lease, no? But if you analyze the actual NPL, by considering the full amount of the lease, you might, to a point, have different clients with different full outstanding amounts from one point to another. If you analyze one quarter on a quarter, there might be clients that go into the NPLs with lower full amount of exposure, no? So that's the explanation on the adjusted NPL.
And on the reason why you see this slight increase on particularly on the fourth quarter has to do with this change in government. We have some clients that even though are not like 100% exposed to the government has, since it was a change in the administration, was somehow a delay on payments, and that of course had an impact on their payment or for the rent to us. No, but we do not anticipate any deterioration further as long as we have already taken the preventive measures for getting very close to these clients and knowing the situation. And we have already run some internal analysis on our maximum exposure to these clients that are exposed to the government, and that's why we do not foresee any further deterioration.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jamie Nicholson with Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Thanks so much for the call. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about your capital ratio. You mentioned how it was boosted to quite solid levels with the perp issue last year, and I'm just wondering how long you feel this capital will last, if it's sufficient to support your business in the foreseeable future, and how you balance your potential needs for capital with your share repurchase program and how you analyze that balance. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Let me start first with the last part of the question. On the share buyback, the impact on the capital is not as much since they are registered at their cost issuance. So the impact on that, what if we decide to cancel them, will not be important. On the PERP has a non-call 7 clause, so at least for 7 years it's going to be there. And based on our internal expectations for growth, we do not see a significant deterioration on the capitalization ratio for at least 3 years.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Chelsea Colon with Aegon. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, and thank you for the call. I just have a couple of questions. First of all, in terms of liquidity, I've noticed that this quarter short-term debt increased again while your available credit lines have fallen over the past few quarters. I assume that these are related. So I'm just wondering what your strategy is going forward in terms of your available credit facilities and the short-term debt, and just to understand what happened in fourth quarter. And then my second question is your view on rates in Mexico going forward. It seems that you increased the variable portion of your debt a little bit now to 15% of total debt. So I'm just wondering what your outlook and strategy is with that.
Yes, thank you, Chelsea, for the question. As we have said, I mean, we are continually analyzing the different source for funding. What I can anticipate to you is that as we speak, for the $1 billion that we have previously announced as a need for the year, we have already secured like roughly $415 million on that. And it's basically on private securitizations with some financial institutions and some credit facilities. We do not anticipate a significant further increase in the rate. Actually, we're working on a stable methodology or the premise on the reference rate in the local market. And these private securitizations I am referring to are, in terms of spread, very pretty much in line to what will be a market securitization locally. So our analysis, as of today, for these $1 billion of debt, which is part of it, 35% on rollover and 65% for growth, we're anticipating no further than 80 bps on the cost of funding on the overall.
I'm sorry, can you repeat what you just said on the cost of funding?
Yeah, so basically, as of today, we announced that the cost of funding of the company is 10.1%. No, that's the weighted average. Considering the new debt that we have secured and the outlook that we don't anticipate any increase in the reference rates locally, no, we estimate that the new incorporation of debt will, at the end, at year end 2019, will represent that cost of funding of 10.1% will go to probably 10.9 by year end, no? So expecting only 80 bps expansion in the actual cost of funding of the company. Of course, this is not going to happen from one day to another. This is going to happen through the course of the year.
Mm-hmm. And does your team internally have a forecast as to when rates locally might begin to come down?
We don't anticipate this year any reference rate cuts, no. Likely for that to happen slowly by the second half or between the second quarter and third quarter of 2020.
Okay, and so your amount of variable rate debt should stay around 15%?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Nick Dimitrov with Morgan Stanley. Please proceed with your question.
Hi there. Thank you very much for the call. I have a couple of quick questions. So the first one is on asset quality. I was looking at your NPLs in the factoring and auto loan book. That's where growth has been, if I remember correctly, it's about 45% year over year. And if I look at NPLs there, they went from like 72 basis points to 4.7%. So clearly, that's going to be kind of a high NPL type of business line. But if you can kind of give us some idea, where do you think, you know, eventually NPLs to settle specifically for that part of the book?
Yeah, on the factoring, it's actually one exposure to one client. And that basically accounts for 60, 70% on the total NPL for factoring. We, on a cautionary measures on 2018, we actually reduced our activity on factoring. If you see that the growth was not so high, no, because we were very, very conservative. And of course, we will continue with that policy or with that measures going forward. Because yes, I mean, we know that if we are under an uncertain environment and some slowdown, those businesses are more exposed to NPLs than the leasing, no?
Got it. Okay, so it's one particular borrower. So, but my second question is going to be on capital. I apologize that we got to go back there, but if I look at your tangible equity to tangible assets as of the end of 2017, that was prior to you issued the perpetuals, right? So you're at 13.9%. If I look at where you are today, you're at 12.5%, right? So obviously the organic capital generation hasn't been sufficient to kind of match growth at the same time you're buying shares back. If you can kind of, and I know that Jamie asked almost the same question, but if you can give us more clarity in terms of how you want to manage capital in terms of tangible equity to tangible assets, in excluding the perps, right, going forward. And again, the ratio right now is 12.5%. At what point do you think that you might have to raise capital if you see a decline into, let's say, I don't want to give you the numbers, but maybe, 11% or 10%?
That's part of the whole analysis and strategy of the company in terms of improving the profitability going forward. As you know, for the past, 24 months, we have seen a deterioration of profitability for the company. Which was definitely directly related to the PERP, no? But the other one was because of top line margin compression and so on, no? Going forward, as we try to reprice and as we will be successful on repricing the new originations, no? We expect profitability to increase. Now, the other consideration on the capitalization would be that we definitely do not anticipate that the shares that we have bought on the buyback program will significantly impact the capitalization if we decide to cancel them, no? So it's really mostly focused on the profitability that the company is looking to have in the upcoming 24 months. That will drive the ratio sustainably for the next 2 to 3 years without needing any requirements on further equity. No, and of course we do keep a significant track on the tangible assets because that's rating agency methodology for the current rating, and that's very important for us to actually maintain the current rating of the company. No?
Got it. So is there a certain level that it does seem like you're comfortable with the current capitalization. Is there a certain level that you're targeting, or how should we think about it?
Yeah. I mean, under 11% on a tangible, we might start considering doing something additional, no?
Okay,
but at this
11%.
Point, yeah.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Gilberto Garcia with Barclays. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. A question on the outlook for operating expenses as you grow in new regions. Could that translate into higher expenses or could your operating efficiencies remain stable?
No, definitely efficiencies will continue to improve. The opening of new offices and the expansion of our presence in Mexico will not impact anything. Remember that we do not carry branches, and the offices that we open in regional areas are not necessarily expensive. And as the learning curve of our advisors starts developing and they bring in more business, it becomes significantly more efficient. So we expect efficiency to keep on improving going forward.
Understood. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Carlos Flores with Santander Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. We have heard that you have been improving your leasing yield quarter-on-quarter basis. Can you give us some color on what actions do you have made to accomplish that? And also, if you have a potential target to reach by 2019 year-end? Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the result of that has been the constant repricing efforts on the leasing implicit yields that we're charging. If you analyze the vintages of originations in the past years, let's say in 2016 or 17, the implicit yield that we were charging in our contracts was close to 16-17%. Now, the minimum rate that we have today is around 20-23%. Okay, the minimum rate is 23%. Last year was 22. This year we started increasing. We started already with a new policy, which is 23%. Those constant repricing efforts, as the vintages of previous originations are basically coming due, no, the new originations will surpass those and make the yield, the leasing yield, more profitable. Hence what you've been seeing in the leasing yield specifically. Now, the outlook for 2019 will be that more or less we expect an expansion of 100 basis points in 2019 or by the end of 2019.
Okay, thank you. So that would be nearly 40%?
That's correct.
Thank you. Once again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Luis Adamame with Newfoundland Capital Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, everyone. Just on the share buyback program, what's the authorized or value in pesos or in dollars that you have to buy for 2019, and also on the cancellation of the shares, you've been very transparent on what earnings per share is and how much you have canceled, but just on an annual basis or on a quarterly basis, when is the cancellation decision made on the shares that you've been buying back?
Yes, hi Luis. That amount for this year, it needs to be approved by the shareholders meeting, both the approval for the reserve for share buyback, but also the cancellation if we decide to cancel some shares from the share buyback program. We haven't had that board meeting that is going to propose for the shareholders meeting, so I cannot anticipate any number right now.
And when is that meeting going to take place?
I would think that in mid-February.
And just to remind us, last year you canceled all the shares that you bought back, or how did you proceed with
that? Basically, all of them. Basically, all of them were canceled.
Perfect. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Natalia Corfield with J.P. Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you for taking my question. I have two questions. One with regards to loan growth. You're sounding kind of optimistic. So I'm wondering if you are expecting a similar pace as of 2018, or if you're expecting that to increase or decrease throughout the year. And also, if you could disclose a little bit more on your dividend policy for this year, if you think your payout ratio is going to be around 20%, 30%, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Sure. I think that we will have a similar year to the one that we had last year in absolute terms. Of course, we are not blind to the macro environment. But we have done our job and our homework internally to increase our services, to increase our product offering, and basically to change and improve our advisory to the client. So that's part of what we feel capable of continue growing under this environment. The dividend policy is that we do not have a dividend policy. Since the IPO, we paid 1 peso per share. And we expect that to continue for this year. Once again, it has to do on a board meeting and approved by the shareholders meeting, and that meeting has not been taking place.
All right. Do you know when this meeting is going to take place?
Mid-February.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We have reached the end of our question and answer session. I would like to turn the call back over to Mr. Pernas for any closing remarks.
Hi. Thank you for your trust and interest in Unifin and for participating in the call. Please do not hesitate to contact us with any questions you may have. We look forward to hearing from you again. Have a good day.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.